You turn to Deuteronomy chapter 7. We'll continue with looking at laws for daily living. And if you are taking notes and you miss some of them, the first law we have is don't forget the Lord who saved you. And then there was serve only the Lord. The third one was be careful when making oaths in the Lord's name. The fourth one, don't tempt the Lord. The fifth, keep all of the Lord's commandments. Six, not only do the right thing, but also do the good thing. And seven, be ready to explain why you do what you do and give your testimony. Eight, do the commandments for your own good. And nine, be separated from the world. And then that brings us to chapter 7, verses 5. And then we'll jump down to 25 and 26, put them together. And law number 10, get rid of the idols. Verse 5 says, but thus shall you deal with them. He's talking about the people of the land. You shall destroy their altars and break down their images and cut down their groves and burn their graven images with fire. And in verse 25, the graven images of their gods shall ye burn with fire. Thou shalt not desire the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it unto thee, lest thou be snared therein, for it is an abomination to the Lord thy God. Neither shalt thou bring an abomination into thine house, lest thou be cursed, lest thou be a cursed thing like it. Thou shalt utterly detest it, and thou shalt utterly abhor it, for it is a cursed thing. Now, we're not talking here about blowing up somebody's temple or mosque, okay? These, as described here in these verses, where we are, of course, when the Israelites went in, there were these things that were there and they could literally take them in and destroy them, okay? We, on the other hand, need to make sure that in the sphere of our control, in the area in which we have authority over things, that the idols of the world are not left standing there to draw our attention away from the Lord. And this is a task that is far greater than the Israelites had. Because for the Israelites, they could literally walk in and they could see a particular object and they could take that object and then destroy it. The idols that we have today, while they may be some physical things, we need to very carefully eradicate them completely. As the Lord said about these images, we need to get them out of the sphere that we live in. Now, the question that we come to in this one is, what are these altars and these images that are to be destroyed today? Okay? And one of the things that we need to be very careful about here is that we have a tendency that once one of these idols has attached itself to us, that we like to explain it away, even using the Bible to do that. And so we need to be very diligent about what we do with these things. Now, I'll let you pick on me. I'll pick on myself first. I enjoy a good story. Now, I enjoy a good story if it's written and I'm reading it, and I enjoy a good story if I'm watching it being acted out or I'm hearing it being told to me. I love a good story. And I think the Lord did too, because he taught using stories all the time. Now, the question is, when can a story become an idol for a person? Now, we can't go and start throwing away all the books that we have in the world. We can't have big book burnings. Because once we start that, well, we've got to throw away the Bible too, because it's a book. All right? So we can't say that books in and of themselves are the idol that has to be destroyed. But are there books that need to be destroyed that are in your sphere of control? Within your own house, are there books there that are not or would lead you away from the worship of God? Okay? Now, and I personally think so because I've experienced myself. I got sort of suckered into buying a book because I thought it was one kind of book. And it wasn't that kind of a book. And so I'm reading it, and I'm looking at it, and so it starts off and it's not real good. But I'm going to force myself to read. I'm this kind of a guy. I'll force myself through it until, you know, maybe this part here has something to do with it's going to be good later on. Okay? But it kept getting worse and worse. And worse. And I literally had to take it and toss it in a garbage can. Okay? Because it was not going to be a book that led me into a righteous worship of God. It was not something that was going to drag my mind and turn me against the way that God wants me to act. Okay? So, there's one example of an idol that could be in your sphere. Okay? Can you think of anything else? We'll get a discussion maybe going here. Okay? The problem with television now is more and more, what is there that... That, yeah.
One problem that I have where I'm away from the Lord is this is the height of football season and we're in the hockey season. So, you know, between Versus and the NFL Network, I will get a draft in that and look down, look at the clock, and there I've wasted my night away and either watching that or between that and having my nose in the Word like I should.
Okay. Our very days are numbered, right, by the Lord? You know, we agree on that, that the Lord has determined this. And in a sense, then, He has given us so much time. And therefore, when that particular thing takes us away from things that could be done for the Lord, then it becomes idle. Right? Okay? Anything else? I don't want to pick on them. Pro sports. Could you give me one of the commandments that pro sports breaks? I would think. That's the big day, isn't it? Sunday's the big day for all pro sports. How about Handy Man Magazine? I don't know whether it's still published or not. Popular Mechanics or whatever. I don't get them anymore or whatever. Popular Science. I don't know whether that one's published anymore either. I don't know. Better Homes and Gardens. Okay. It's what, yeah. What is the purpose that comes out of reading their articles? Does it cause you, and this is not new with me, I heard this, somebody else brought this up to me. When you read that, do you become discontent with what you have? And you want what's in the magazine? Because the Lord said, be content. Okay? And so if the magazine causes you to be discontent, then obviously it must be a lot. Must be an idol. Okay? So, it's a lot harder for us. I mean, in the old days, they had an idol for everything. You remember Rachel and what she did to her dad's idols? Hauled them off with her. Okay. Well, there was a little idol set aside there. If you wanted to make sure you had cooked a good meal, well, there was your kitchen idol right there. Okay, if you wanted to make sure that you had a good planting and growing season, well, there was your little idol right there in its little niche. Okay, and yet today we have to search them out. And that was the commandment that was given to Israel when they went into the land. Search them out. Don't let a single one of them remain. Burn them up, grind them up. Throw them away. Don't even use the pieces that are left over for anything. Okay? So, that's number 10. Get rid of the idols. You got a New Testament verse for me? Remember, I told you last week we were looking at this. Is there a New Testament verse that fits the rule that we find in Deuteronomy? In 1 John, if you don't remember. My little children, keep yourself from idols. Okay. Law number 11. This is found in Deuteronomy 7:6. Remember who you were and how you got to be what you are now. Deuteronomy 7:6 says, "For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because ye were more in number than any people, for ye were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt." If you read the entirety of the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is continually going back and say, remember back. Keep remembering before. And in this particular statement here, he tells them, remember that you were nothing. Okay? There was no reason why God wanted you. You had nothing to offer him. And yet, you are something special. Today, you're something special. Why? Not because you were something that God wanted. You were something that He took and made into something that's special. Is this true just about Israel? Or is there a New Testament verse that applies it to you? Are you the apple of His eye? And is it because you were so great and wonderful? What do you think? Are you special?
God has chosen the base, thanks to the Lord. 1 Corinthians.
Okay. Now we're a big deal. But don't let it go to your head. Okay? Remember, you were chosen not because you were the greatest of all. All right? Law number 12. Remember that God is always faithful. Know therefore, this is in verse 9, know therefore that the Lord your God, He is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant and mercy with them that love Him and keeps His commandments to 1,000 generations and repays them that hate Him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack to him that hates Him. He will repay him to his face. One of the great attributes of my God is faithfulness. I can trust Him to do what He says. Now, His faithfulness is a two-way street. Those who love Him and keep His commandments can expect that He will keep His promises and show mercy to them. On the other hand, those who hate Him can expect that He will destroy them. Now, how does this happen? To those that love Him, they will find that by keeping His commandments, that they will receive the blessing. The term here, to 1,000 generations, is a poetical way of saying forever. Okay? The covenant that is spoken of here is life in this present time, an abundant life in eternity. Okay? There's a blessing to that person. That's not only present, but it's also eternal. To those who hate Him and will not keep His commandments, they bring upon themselves the evils that the commandment protects the believer from. They find only death at the end of this present time, and the second death of the lake of fire in eternity. God is faithful to everybody. All His creatures. Okay? But there's a two-way street on it. Here is an example of that great mystery of God working a thing, but man is responsible for his own actions because he either believes and obeys God or disbelieves and disobeys God. Law number 13. Do not despise the chastening of the Lord. This is in Deuteronomy 8, 5 and 6. You shall also consider in your heart that a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in His ways and to fear Him. Now, you'll notice that we took a big jump. We skipped a whole lot of verses in there. And in those verses, in there's a summary that reviews some of the history of the Exodus from Egypt and what the Lord had done for the Israelites. Some of what was done was chastening of the people to prepare them to enter the promised land. It's important to understand that sometime the Lord will bring bad times and hard times into our lives to train us and inspire us to keep His commandments. The joy in these difficulties is knowing that I am a child of God because He only does this to His children. Just as a father cares enough to train his sons and daughters to do right. Now, New Testament? Okay, Hebrews 12, 5, 7, and 11. Okay, three times the writer of Hebrews describes the fact that God chastens those that He loves. I'm reading a book now that deals somewhat with this particular aspect of God's work with people, and He does not keep us. He does not promise that we will have good things all the time. In Romans, what is the statement concerning that? Remember? My God will work all things to the good of the one that believes Him. That's not a complete statement there, but essentially that's what it says. He'll work all things for good. Okay, He won't make them all good for you. Now that's a big fallacy among some churches, okay, some religious group, that God promised that He would always give you the good things. But that's not what He says. Sometimes a good shot of pain is a good thing. And I think Tim was talking a little bit about that on Sunday too. Okay, he's not always just rolling along, doing everything well or having everything go well for you. Does not always do what's best for you. And as fathers, and I'll address you since you have a young child yet, it's not always your job to make sure that everything flows smoothly. Sometimes it's your job to instigate a little bit of something to teach, train the child that they become a better person for it. And that was what the example was of how God chastened the children of Israel in the wilderness by giving them times when there wasn't food and yet providing for them food. Did He provide the food that they wanted? No. Okay. Until the one time He gave them all the food they wanted. And they found out, you don't want that, do you? Okay. And sometimes He didn't give them water right when they wanted it. Okay. Until they learned not to complain. And then the water was provided. Okay. Law number 14. Be thankful. In Deuteronomy 8:10. When you have eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord your God for the good land which He has given you. This verse is the basis of why I say a blessing for the food that's on the table before me. But more than that, it is the basis for saying that a believer should be thankful to the Lord for all the good that He has given. God does not expect us to be thankful until He has given the blessing, but there's no excuse for not being thankful when we sit down in the easy chair with our stomachs full. If we should be thankful when God gives us good things, then remember also to be thankful to people who do you good also. New Testament? And the peace of God, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also you are called in one body, and be ye thankful. Law number 15. Be careful when times are good. Okay. Verses 11 and following says, "Beware that you forget not the Lord your God in not keeping His commandments and His judgments and His statutes, which I command you this day. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built goodly houses and dwell therein, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought you forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed you in a wilderness with manna, which your fathers knew not, that He might humble you, and that He might prove you to do you good at your latter end. And you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth." The times that I find myself most forgetting God and the activities that draw me closer to Him are the times when everything is just going so well. Tim mentioned about the mountaintop experience. We don't want to be in the mountaintop. We need to be in the valley where He is. Okay? It's at these times that you tend to forget Bible reading and prayer. Okay? Because you are so enamored with the things that God has provided for you and given to you. You can see here that the Lord will provide more than enough in due time. There are always the wilderness experiences that need to be part of the believer's life that train him to understand that God provides the necessities first and then the riches as he trusts and follows God. As you mature, you will see that this is true in the spiritual life as well as our earthly existence. We need to learn to trust Him. New Testament, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all of these things will be added unto you as needed. Do we have time for the last one? I think. Law number 16. Be careful with wealth. "But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He that gives you power to get wealth, that He may establish His covenant with which He swore unto your fathers, as it is this day." Wealth is a relative thing. It was something on the radio I was listening to that if you got a piece of bread and some change in your pocket, you're wealthier than 90% of the people on earth. Now, how wealthy are you compared to everybody else? And so, the average American would be a wealthy person as soon as you walk into almost any other place on earth, some place like Haiti or some place in Africa. Wealth should never focus on the how much you possess, but more on how you use your possessions. It is God that gives you power to get wealth, but the purpose to which that wealth is to be used is to establish His covenant. So if that wealth was gained by violating His covenant, it will never serve you well. Also, if that wealth is used to violate His covenant, it can only lead to vanity. Okay? The purpose of them getting wealth was to support the covenant that He had made with Israel. The same, likewise, is true with us. Okay? If I steal to get my wealth, okay, it's not a godly wealth. If I if I use my wealth to create something that will cause somebody to sin, it's not a godly wealth. And even if you have good wealth, what did Paul say? Something like, though I give all my wealth, or I can't remember what the term was he used. If I give all to feed the poor and have not... Yeah, it's nothing. But it says something about my wealth, too, or something. My riches, okay? I have nothing. Okay. Wealth is to be gained and used in a godly manner. And then it is something that is worthy. Luke 12:15, and He said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses. Okay. Not that you might not possess something, but that should never be the focus of your life. And that's where I am today. So, off to the prayer rooms.